Welcome to Beyond the Reiki Gateway, a podcast reserved for the spiritually curious. Journey further with Reiki Masters Kathleen Johnson and Andrea Kennedy through in-depth conversations, many featuring inspiring and intriguing special guests to enrich your unique spiritual progression.
Hello, everyone. Kathleen here with another episode of Beyond the Reiki Gateway. Today, I'm really excited to announce that we have Dave Markowitz back with us. You may remember that he was with us in December talking about his work with empaths, sensitives, and intuitives, and he's back for an encore performance. And for those of you who haven't heard Dave the first time, he is a two-time best-selling author. He's an intuitive healing facilitator and guide for all of those who identify as empaths, sensitives, and intuitives. Dave has shared the lecture bill with Deepak Chopra, and his work has been endorsed by Lee Harris, The Shift Network, Shirley MacLaine, and many others. Throughout his career, Dave has personally worked with thousands of empaths and sensitives, and also enjoys conducting experiential workshops in which attendees can achieve tangible results in minutes. Dave, we're so honored and excited to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Especially with today's topic, the empath-narcissist connection. I know that many of our listeners can relate, and I'm sure we'll find this helpful in their own lives.
Yeah, it's good to hear. I hope that's true. And it's just great to see and hear you both. And anyone who's listening, thanks for tuning in.
I've been so looking forward to this meeting again and this conversation. So I guess really to get started, Dave, we hear the term narcissist a lot and, well, also empath. And I think our listeners are probably pretty familiar with empaths and what that entails. How would you characterize a narcissist? How do we even know that we are in a relationship with a narcissist?
Wow, great question. There's so many possibilities here. Narcissists, by definition, are pretty much all about themselves. They'll say they love you, but really what they're loving is what you give to them or what they're taking from you. They're often closed to true feelings and real intimate connections. I think it's also important to maybe delineate a little bit that, of course, I'm not a licensed psychotherapist. I don't pretend to diagnose people with this term narcissist. But what I like to think of is that all of us have narcissistic tendencies. They're either a lot or not so much. And many of the people I work with are more of the latter, not so much. And strangely, there's this almost very yin-yang kind of thing where we empaths and sensitives feel we need them and they feel they need us. What's also really important is to know that we don't want to look at this as such a horrible thing that this person is so horrible that they're evil. Really, like a lot of pains and illness, it's the end result of not feeling unconditional love when we're kids. The narcissist has the more extreme version of that, and it makes them really insecure. And if you hear someone bragging about themselves all the time, they might be narcissistic or even a technically known as a narcissist, right? So someone's all about like, I'm the only one that can do this. I'm the only one that can save X, Y, and Z. People who are narcissistic often feel they know something, if not everything, about everything. And they're really amazing and quite skilled at deflecting. So the more you challenge them, they challenge you back. And in a way, if we try to challenge them, we're actually playing their game. It's like me playing basketball against like Michael Jordan. It's just not even going to be close, right? People say he's 50 or whatever now. Even in my prime, it doesn't matter. You get the idea. If we play someone else's game and they're a master at it, we're going to lose that game. And they have an ability to sort of hook into our weakness and really demand our attention. And they are ultimately attention seekers. A lot of people in who are maybe celebrities, some politicians. I'll let you all fill in your least favorite name there. People that really need to be seen and heard. There's typically at least one in every family. And if you think about your own dynamics, most of the people I work with have at least one parent who is narcissistic, often quite extreme. And because of our childhood wounds of, you know, as a kid, all we want is unconditional love, strangely similar to the narcissist. But the narcissist is so blocked because of their pain that they can't even access that part of themselves. So they're constantly seeking attention and energy from other people, whether it's empaths or anybody. And empaths have an amazing ability to know where we're needed. We can sense people that are in pain. And that's a big part of the dynamic with the empath and narcissist is we feel we can help them. And a lot of us, you know, if we were on video right now, I'd ask everyone to raise their hand if anyone had been in a relationship or are currently in one with a narcissist. And I would bet 80, 90%, give or take, would probably raise their hand. So it's super common. So please don't beat yourself up if you're listening to this and you're in a relationship right now where you feel that the other person is being narcissistic. There's a reason for this. As Shakespeare said, there's a method to the madness. It might seem, you know, on a conscious level, you would say, oh, I would never want to attract someone like that. Doesn't matter what we think consciously. I mean, I think we see this a lot. We can send a lot of conscious intention. Sometimes things never shift. Why? Because the unconscious is saying, I don't want that to shift, right? It's very good at attracting what we're familiar with. So a similar kind of dynamic, if we grow up, let's say, with a narcissistic father, if we don't heal those wounds, we're going to attract narcissistic other people and potentially partners in our lives. And it doesn't matter, male, female, trans, it's the energy we're talking about. You know, having been in a relationship with someone, I won't give the year span or anything, I don't need to out anyone here. But while I was in this relationship, I thought it was a pretty solid relationship. And she had so much going for her. She was really the center of attention, you know, very attractive, extremely talented, could sing, could dance, could act, could draw, could paint. I mean, you name it, she could do it. And of course, I was drawn to that. After, I don't know, a year, give or take, whatever, the relationship ended, we remained friends. What I didn't realize was I was filling this need for her, this need for masculine attention, even after the relationship was over. Even while we were dating, she was in touch with some of her ex-boyfriends, which I wasn't super happy about. I know she wasn't dating them or anything like that, but still just a phone call here and there. And just something felt a little weird about it, but I'm like, oh, you know, maybe they were close one day and there's still a nice connection. I should honor that, right? But what happened was, I guess a year, maybe a little more. Oh, actually, while we were dating, everyone that met her was like, dude, you know, she's a narcissist. And I was like, no, don't be ridiculous. I'm a spiritual healer. I'm not going to attract someone like that, please. So I really wasn't seeing it. We met up again, just, you know, casual hang a year or two, whatever, after we officially broke up. And it didn't feel good. Something was very different in me, at minimum. I can't say what was true with her. And I remember after we said goodbye, I'm just sitting in my car. I'm like, wow, what is it? What is this uncomfortable feeling? And I realized this is like my dad in female form.
Oh.
Energy was very similar. It was all about her. And I had been studying while we were dating. I was studying a lot of, you know, tantric worship kind of thing. And I was like, you know, worship the goddess, which sounds great and certainly has its place. But it also blocked me to seeing the true essence of that dynamic between she and I. So I had to really break down and say, okay, where is this common in my life? Which one of my friends, for example, how long ago, whatever. And I thought back, one of my best friends in college was a narcissist. He was like my dad, but a funnier version who knew about AC/DC and Kiss, you know, because what we spoke about during college. If anyone listening, that was the early 80s, you know, so conversations I wouldn't have with my dad, but still, he was always the center of attention. He was very funny. He's very charismatic. Those are also some pretty common characteristics of narcissists. They're so good at what they do, even if they're sort of average looking. And I know that sounds kind of judgmental, but let's get real here. We're all human, right? They play up whatever they have, and they always appear to be even more attractive than they are. Because the thing is, they're kind of meeting you where your wounds are. It hits your familiarity buttons, if you will. And we kind of get drawn towards that. As empaths and healers, we think we can help them, so we stay with them. But meanwhile, we lose ourselves in the mix. It's really important to note that if this does happen or is happening, please don't beat yourself up. Again, this is an unconscious calling towards this kind of dynamic. But the conscious mind in that case can say, okay, is this working for me or not? And when we do our work around recognizing the energetic push-pull and really let ourselves process whatever we feel we're getting from them or not getting, we can shift our vibration and stop that attraction. It doesn't mean that we're going to instantly just stop looking or being attracted to a narcissist if we're in a party or some social situation. But it means that you can recognize your feelings a lot quicker, like I did after that relationship, right? Had I known this, it might have been different. But we can recognize the feelings within us and say, okay, what is it in me that's finding this person attractive? What is it in me that maybe even needs to be seen with this person? Narcissists are really good with like, oh, here's my good friend, fill in the blank with some famous person, right? They're famous by association a lot of times. They don't really do anything sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Long answer, but I hope that's helpful.
It is helpful because I just thought, as you were talking, I had realizations about people in my past that I hadn't really thought about or considered as narcissists. And as you were talking, I thought, oh my goodness, yeah, I recognize that now. As you were talking, I was going through this whole journey of kind of like rediscovering some things about relationships in my own past. So I thought that was great.
Okay, cool. I hope everyone else felt that or kind of saw something a little bit with more clarity. And again, any of us, please don't beat ourselves up. This is an unconscious thing. Doesn't mean we can't work with it. But until, you know, as Jung said, you can't heal anything while it's in the subconscious, right? You got to bring it out, bring it to the light. Understanding the why that we often feel we can help or even heal them. The reality is they don't want to be helped or healed. They just want to keep you on the, like a little fishing rod, like reaching out the hook and give them what they need.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting what you said about past relationships. Like Andrea and you, Dave, I was sitting here kind of rewinding my life and going, oh, yeah, that's interesting. And there's been, I would say, more than a few in my past, and there's still a couple lurking around in my present, I'm sorry to say. And I like what you said about it being unconscious, because when I look back at my past, I was pretty much unaware, you know, of myself and who I am as an empath, and I didn't know anything about that. And it was then that I seemed to collect these people like magnets. But now looking back, I'm a lot more aware than I used to be, and I've been able to establish some boundaries in my life. And that makes all the difference. And I, even with the narcissists who are present in my life today, I've been able to exercise those boundaries so that it's not like it used to be. I'm wondering if you can speak to that a little bit, talk about the boundaries and how empaths can help themselves when dealing with a narcissist, because sometimes narcissists are people we can't really cut out of our lives.
Right. We may not be able to cut them out, but we can minimize our interactions if needed. Now, of course, the spiritual challenge is to stay present and in a place of unconditional love with who is ever in our path. And if someone is triggering these old wounds, it makes it really difficult. So it's totally okay to step away for a bit. And for some, it's necessary to actually step away forever. I have a lot of clients that say, I can't speak to my brother anymore or whoever, right? Or I had a fallout and we're probably never going to speak again. And there's a tremendous sadness in that. And yet, if we look at it from the spiritual, more holistic perspective, it's really a challenge to do our work. Mm-hmm. We can always run from our pain. But it's going to catch up eventually. You're going to meet someone else with a similar vibration. My mentor had a great phrase. He called it same partner, different face syndrome. Mm-hmm. Right? If you don't do your work, you attract someone with a very similar sometimes even the characteristics are the same. You know, some people say you marry your parents, right? One of both, right? Sometimes the characteristics are uncanny. Like, oh my God, my dad used to do that. You know, you can go kind of go crazy. But it is an opportunity for healing. So ultimately, you want to do your work. Now, a lot of times we feel that if I just had that one conversation, that one thing that could bring light to our dynamic with this person. And there's a chance of that happening, but if someone's really heavily into that narcissistic scale, if you want to call it that, it's pretty, I'm going to say low odds on a good outcome. A lot of times they'll just say, what are you talking about? You know, and then they gaslight and make us feel bad about our own selves and question our own reality, which is a really common tool of narcissists. And again, it's not conscious on their end either. They're just dealing with their pain because they are not going to look at something within themselves. They're very good at avoiding accountability. They're very good at saying, you know, if I win, everyone loves me. If I lose, there's something wrong with the system.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Just as an example. You know, while it's common to kind of joke, and maybe it's not a joke, if you meet someone like that and you say, well, run the other way. If you need to, it's okay, right? We don't need to step into a fire to know we're going to get burned, but we can look at the fire from the outside and do our work so that if we did need to step into the fire, if we did feel a need to connect or desire to connect with this person, that at least it'll be more possible. And then we won't be as attached to an end result if we do our really good work. And we can actually be in the presence of that person and not have them drive us crazy. Because again, it's an unconscious wound on their part. Just like our wounding to attract that person, their stuff is unconscious too. And we wouldn't get mad at someone for, you know, getting dementia, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that different here, where it doesn't make sense to get mad at someone for acting from their unconscious wounds. I mean, if we can, I mean, it's not wrong to do that, but we do want to catch that. And that's a clue of what we want to work with.
Yeah, I absolutely love this non-judgmental approach that you have to it. I love it. You use the term gaslighting, and I just recently was having a conversation with someone, and they actually were not sure what gaslighting was. And so could you please describe what gaslighting is for anybody listening who might have heard, you know, different things about that?
For me, it's when someone makes you doubt yourself, right? So if you, let's just say Andrea is with someone who is slightly narcissistic, and you say to that person, you know, every time we go somewhere, I feel that you're not seeing me, you're connecting with everyone else but me. They would say, well, you know, we'll get up and do something about it. Like they'll make you feel, I don't know the exact words, but something in them will not take ownership. Oh, wow, I'm not really connecting with my partner here. And they'll say, you know, it's your fault. Basically, it's a blame game in a kind of a way.
I see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think people have different definitions, but in general, something like that. And we do want to try to stay present to that because they're triggering that old wound. I want to be unconditionally loved. And then that makes us morph and lose ourselves to their whims. And again, not wrong or bad. And what you said about the non-judgmental approach, I think this is the most important thing. Ideally, we have compassion for someone who's in pain. And yeah, they might drive us crazy. So what? Everyone does, right? It's just part of being human. Okay. But I think if we get into this tangent of saying that person's evil, they're wrong, they're bad, even a malignant narcissist, which is someone who's really, let's just say, incapable of empathy, someone who's capable of, you know, starting a war, for example, or torturing someone else, they're shut off energetically. Their hearts have just been closed. But that's their pain that got them to that place. They weren't born like that. I haven't yet to meet a baby who comes out, and, you know, looking like the devil. I don't know what I mean. You know? Not that I believe in devil, but you get the idea. I think we're all born empathic and born intrinsically knowing of our connections with others, and our life experiences either reduce or increase that connection. And narcissists typically is an end result of not really feeling seen and heard. So they do anything to feel seen and heard. And we do too. I mean, all of us do it in some degree, whether it's, you know, I'm going to wear the shirt today or whatever, you know, or I'm going to write a book. I mean, it could be anything. But with a narcissist, it's never ending, and it causes a trail often of destruction in a way in its wake. We want to be really conscious of it But ideally, again, practicing compassion. And if you have to do that from afar, so be it, right? It's a great practice, sending compassion to someone or getting in touch with the compassion within our own selves, reminding ourselves that they're hurting and notice that pain and don't go into the place of, I can fix it. That's part of the empath credo, is I can help this person. And a lot of times we can. So we get this egoic belief we can potentially help everyone. But as both of you well know, if someone's not really in a place that they want to be helped by us or by whatever, they're not going to receive it well, you know? And with a narcissist, they're typically not going to receive it well. They won't even recognize there's an issue there. Again, they'll make you feel like you're the issue. So it's kind of insidious. You know, I just picture that fish hook, you know, like even being vegan, just the idea is horrible to me. Just like some people just put a hook in the ocean and I'm going to go in detail there, but you get the idea.
Yes.
Again, something to be super aware of and an opportunity to really live from our hearts, like really live our message. A lot of times we've all been there, right? Someone's on the path, someone's spiritual, they identify as X, Y, and Z, and those are beautiful things. But when the crap hits the fan, we can not be so empathic and empathetic and really get into a place of hatred and anger for someone who might be exhibiting narcissistic tendencies. And I'm not even making those feelings wrong. If those feelings are there, they're raw, they're real, they should be honored and worked with. They're signs to me that there's something going on inside of ourselves that with some work could really improve. And from that point, you know, we might actually attract less narcissistic people or people with less of the characteristic as we do our work. So I'm sure you've all seen that too, right? You do our work and we send out a different vibration and we attract different people. One of the ways to minimize contact, if needed, is to do our own work. And that's okay. Like, they're going to find someone else to siphon their energy from. And we have to be okay with that. It'll suck for that person, but then they get the opportunity to learn what we just learned. And maybe they're even friends of ours. And, you know, you can bond over that.
Right.
I like what you said about doing our own work. I referenced that when I spoke earlier about how I used to attract what I think are narcissists like a magnet. But along my path, at some point I realized that, like you say, it's an opportunity for me to look at myself and say, okay, what in me needs to heal? And take it, not say what's wrong with them, but what in me can I change in order to kind of move past this paradigm, if you will? And that has been enormously helpful. And I have noticed over the years that a real shift changed for me. I don't attract many narcissists. What I do attract now are people who are in narcissist-empath relationships, the empaths in them, and are looking for guidance or someone to talk to hold space, whatever. So that's a huge shift for me. And I'm honored to be in that place. But it involved many years of work on myself. So I think you make an excellent point about that. And I'd be curious to know some of the people listening to this, if they've noticed that, like as they do their own work, have they seen that change?
Yeah. So if you're listening and you resonate, please leave a comment, you know, that this has worked for you too. You can inspire others.
Absolutely.
With 6 seconds of typing.
Exactly.
I think the more people that really share their success, the more it, to paraphrase Marianne Williamson, unconsciously liberates others.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
And invites them to do their work right as well. Like, oh, wow, there's a way out of this.
There is.
Yeah. It's important to remember that as challenging as certain situations can be, there's a way out. A lot of times, though, of course, it's through rather than out.
Yeah.
Or through to get out. We got to go through the muck. We got to crawl through the mud on our knees and beg and whatever is necessary. But also to do the emotional work. So really to kind of analyze within ourselves, what is it in me that I need filling? What void is in me that needs filled, that this narcissist is filling? If I fill that void on my own, then there's nothing for the narcissist to hook into, right? So I kind of picture it, you know, just like a space, for example, whether it's in your aura or your physical body, doesn't matter, just a space. It's a frequency that comes out from that space. And if we don't do our work, we're sending out the frequency of, I'm here for you. no matter what, at all costs. Unfortunately, the cost a lot of times is really heavy. So when we're not living our best life, spirit lets us know, and our bodies let us know with pain and illness. And it's invitations to slow down and really look at what's going on. Also, unhealthy relationships can be an opportunity, but we often get trapped in that. So sometimes we get really dependent on that other person, especially if we're in our own pain or some kind of illness, and the other person, the narcissist potentially, is sort of supporting us financially. And in that respect, there's this fear that if I can't break away right now, and really it's forcing you to do your work. And what often happens is the narcissist might actually notice that, subconsciously, of course, and change their tactics. They may actually come at you a little bit stronger, playing their game. So we need to be really super aware of that. And we got to up our game, keep filling that wound with unconditional love through our own inner work, but also processing the fear of being alone or separate or unloved, or the sadness of not feeling connected. A lot of times we get caught up in doing it very mentally. And there's a place for that. It's not wrong or bad. It's a good start to me. It's not the full picture. So without doing our emotional processing and really allowing the feelings that come up from the opposite of what we're trying to attract. So let me try to describe that a little more. If there's a wound in us that says, well, we'll stick with the same one, that I'm lacking being seen and heard, right? The narcissist can see and hear you to the degree that they can, enough so that you think that wound is filled, right? What is the feeling of not being seen and heard? For most, it'll be sadness, maybe anger. So when we process the opposite of what we're trying to achieve, we actually create more space. And through that work, and it can be months or years, it's not like, oh, I just cried, so everything's going to be different, right? It can be, especially, you know, if you've been around that energy for a while. So it's not easy work. I would really recommend that if someone's listening to this, to work with a practitioner who understands what we're talking about here. Whether it's me or any of you, Andrea or Kathleen, you know, whoever you trust, because you need a sacred container to really process your feelings. A lot of times we get mental with them. We mentalize them and compartmentalize them. And feelings are not meant to be micromanaged. In fact, if you think about it, feelings and your left brain linear aspects, they speak different languages. So we really can't talk to a feeling. You can't honestly talk yourself out of a fear. So just an example, someone has a fear of going in airplanes. Okay. You can show them every statistic on the planet that says 1/1,000,000,000% of a gazillionth or whatever it is actually have a problem being on an airplane. They will look at that and say, uh-huh, see, but it's possible, right? They're not going to look at the odds. And it's just a way of saying you can't really reason with fear. We have to process it emotionally, work through the fear, allow it to be there. And that's a lot easier when you're being held in a sacred container. It's very difficult to get to our own deep emotions. Our minds often will distract and do anything possible to prevent us from going there. The mind is basically saying, hey, I got hurt once or many times prior. I'm not going to let that happen again. So we're going to stay closed in the heart space. But if we're being seen through the eyes of unconditional love, you know, we spoke about this a little bit before we hit record. If we're really feeling seen and heard through the eyes of unconditional love and ears of unconditional love, something happens inside. We're filling that wound, that void, if you will, of not having received that unconditional love. It goes back to the original abandonment wounds, which I have a course coming up in at some point in a book eventually. There are four main abandonment wounds that all of us experience often the first couple of years of life, and they tailor our adult experiences. And we often do things or don't do things to avoid getting into those woundings. And it makes sense, right? Why would we want to feel that again? So the mind does everything possible. So if there's a wound of aloneness, for example, we'll always want to be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
We'll always want to be connecting with people. And unfortunately, with the pandemic, our connections became more severed, right? People starting to come back to, you know, connecting now. But for people that grew up with this, you know, or became a big part of their formative years, teenagers, for example, having a lot of difficulty connecting with other people. One of my clients just told me she was like kind of babysitting, you know, for her kid and all of her kids' friends. And they were texting each other in the same room. It's just how they communicate.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. So for us being, or for me being over 50, I don't know about you too, but you know, that's crazy. But, you know, missing an opportunity, right? How much miscommunication can happen through text versus in person, but, you know, they're shut down. And the pandemic didn't help that, obviously. So we want to be really careful and conscious of our ability to connect with people and what need is being served there. And if we're not getting that need met, how can we meet that ourselves and or through attracting really quality people who can see and hear us? And if you need to pay for that at first, so what, right? No one picks up a tennis racket and just starts playing like a pro. You learn from someone else who's better at you, right? Or learning a language or learning an instrument. We need to learn this ideally through someone who's been there, right? And share our knowledge and wisdom with each other in whatever way possible. So if you're listening to this, just a recommendation, just what I've seen work and not work. And I think that's maybe the best way to put it. It works a lot better to do our deeper work, our emotional work, when we're being held like that. And it can be, you know, virtually too. It can certainly be online. The energy knows, and you know, it goes where it needs to go, and we just need to feel it. And from that place, we can do the deeper work. And that's the real challenge with an empath narcissist relationship, is creating space where we can give ourselves what we need. And then the narcissist sometimes will just kind of taper off. Like I said earlier, sometimes they increase their game, if you will. But a lot of times, if they see that their game isn't working, eventually they taper off. And then it becomes a more natural breakup as opposed to what we often fear, which is a horrible breakup, especially if there's financial dependence there.
Yeah, that's a whole nother layer. It's very different if you're in a committed relationship, like maybe a marriage that's gone on for decades, you know, versus just a friendship. The dynamic is hugely different, but wow. I very much agree that having an objective and knowledgeable person to work with, I think that is really valuable for people as they navigate what might be better for them, you know, to choose. So I'm all for that, Dave, but can people do some things, you know, on their own as well, you know, or if they're just coming to realize that their significant other or a meaningful relationship that they are in, if they're just waking up to this dynamic, are there some things that they might do for themselves?
Definitely. Well, any self-care is going to be helpful. You're sending out a different message when you're doing even some self-care versus completely being there for someone else. You're honoring your own self. And I think that goes a long way as well. As far as another part of it, like making that decision, is this something I want to stay in or not? For me, those kind of decisions can't be made from level of mind. I think Einstein said you can't fix a problem that you created on the level of mind. So if you created it, maybe even unconsciously, but you created the relationship. So there's typically, you know, blinders that we're all wearing that don't really let us see, feel, and know our deepest truth. When I have a major decision I need to make, whether it's buying a car or moving, for example, when I got the message to move from New York to Portland when I was 45, this was a psychically, you know, divinely inspired message. And I, of course, said, no way. You know, being a typical New Yorker, like nothing else exists but New York. Mm-hmm. And then I ran into a friend. I still remember 23rd Street. My friend Joe, he's a shaman. And I hadn't spoke to him in a while. And he goes, hey, I heard you moving to the West Coast. I'm like, how'd you know? He goes, I don't know. You know, so you got all these clues. Sometimes other people provided us the clues. But even with that, I let myself meditate pretty consistently for several days in a row. I really wanted to get out of mind as best I could to really receive the deeper guidance on my own. And even the best channels often need a few moments to kind of get in the flow or more, right? So the mind is very tricky and very good at what it does. It's sort of a little narcissist in our brains, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That we have to work with. So doing that inner work often requires accessing it. And if you're not in a position to work with someone, or even in addition to, the more inner awareness that we can bring to consciousness, I think the better our chances of really anything is going to be. Sometimes I meditate and say, what should I make for dinner? I mean, sometimes that's, I'm joking, but what I'm trying to point out, hopefully well enough, is our conscious minds are always coming from our wounding until they're not, right? So there's a path to make that happen. And a lot of our choices are really not choices. They're coming, like we said earlier, to fill the abandonment wounds that we often feel when we're first born, et cetera. So to really remember that, right? Socrates said, I know nothing but the fact of my own ignorance, right? The more the Dave part of me, the inner Dave part of me can remember that, the more I can recognize and listen to the mind, but not necessarily adhere to its thoughts. I can constantly, ideally, or at least consistently, remind myself that what I know in my mind is an end result of what everyone else has taught me. And it may not be true, and it may not even be good for me. So to access that deeper truth, I think that's a big part of the deeper work also. And that can be emotional as well. We might get in touch with these layers of sadness around, wow, who have I been? Or who the heck am I? Or I have a lot of clients that say, who the heck am I? And I think it's a good question. A lot of times we get caught up in this very Western idea of you have to make something of yourself. You have to be on your mission, et cetera. What if your mission is just to be loving no matter where you are? It's a possibility. In fact, I'd say a pretty strong possibility, right? And that's all, you know, a mind-generated reality. And those typically don't lead to joy and happiness. Maybe temporary, right? When we get that promotion or get that car or get that relationship or whatever it is, there's an initial joy there, sure. But if that's coming from level of mind, it's going to be temporary. And then the mind is always searching for its next hit, if you will. Right. So again, kind of going, trying to work past that, going beyond that. And one of the advantages of working with someone else is that someone else can typically see what's going on within us better than we can see on our own. I've had really, you know, I'd say big names, if you will, reach out to me when I first started doing this work. And my first reaction a lot of times was, wait a minute, you can't do that. And I remember one just said, what made you think I could? I thought that was really powerful. It really stuck with me. And it was my illusion that someone in this elevated, heightened, if not famous place, would have access to their own answers, their own deepest answers. And they said, no, it's beyond my conscious knowing. How am I, you know what I mean? So it really reminded me, like, if that person can say, I don't know, I can say, I don't know. In fact, I did this in a course recently in the chat room. I said, what are the three most powerful words you can say to anyone? So a lot of different options. Not one said the following, which I think I already indicated, was I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to say I don't know creates a space to know. It creates a space for a spirit to infuse us with that wisdom. And that's the part undermined, right? Our spiritual selves, our body wisdom, et cetera. Lots of different names, lots of different layers, but all of them are beyond mind, which is, I think, what your original question was like a half hour ago.
Perfectly okay. I frequently say, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I also tell myself pretty frequently that, and this is true for me anyway, the more I learn, I realize the less I know. And that is so true for me. I love to learn and I'm always learning new things, but every time I learn something new, it just brings it right home to me how little I really know. Yeah, it's true though. There's so much knowledge out there. No one can amass it all or even come close to having a fraction of it, right?
Except the narcissist, I think.
Well, yeah, the narcissist, of course, of course. And
of course.
Yeah, I know about that.
Yeah, boy, that sounds familiar. That whole gaslighting thing, and you mentioned blame. I call it blame and shame. You know, that's the routine. Blame and shame. And they're very good at it.
Yeah,
masters, absolutely.
If there was a PhD in blaming others, the narcissist would have.
Exactly. Because they can then avoid accountability and any kind of responsibility for the, you know, destruction they leave in their wake. Unfortunately. But I have a question. You mentioned about how, you know, a lot of people have at least one narcissistic parent, and that kind of helps them, if you will, attract narcissists in their lives going forward. What about folks who don't have narcissistic parents or a narcissistic parent? What about them could attract narcissistic personality? Would you think it might be an abandonment issue?
It could be. I mean, really could be a lot of different things. It's hard to just kind of give a blanket answer on that. I mean, if your soul needs to experience something, you're going to experience something. Again, most of the time it's, you know, in our formative years, but it can happen later on, absolutely. You know, people that do the work around narcissists can see what's really happening and can successfully, potentially, you know, separate themselves from that. People that don't do the work around narcissists or even aren't aware of it think it's normal. It's familiar. They'll attract more and more of them. They'll vote them into office. There's no accountability there. And that's the key word that you mentioned earlier, Kathleen. It really jumped out when you mentioned that word, accountability. And I think that's one of the biggest concepts in our personal evolutions. Can I be accountable for the things that I've done and said without blaming myself and recognizing a lot of those things are coming from my unconscious wounding? That doesn't mean to randomly go around hurting people. It means to recognize that it's part of the learning experience. And, you know, when necessary or when possible, apologize, own it. You know, one of the things I'm a firm believer in is not just apologizing, because I think that's a start, but it's, to me, it's very incomplete. But having it followed with a promise to do better.
Yeah.
So sometimes for any number of reasons, you can't contact someone that you feel you might have hurt, in which case you promise to yourself and to source, I'm going to do better. Not I'm going to try. I'm going to do better. I'm going to do everything possible to learn what I need to learn from this and really let myself feel the pain of what that caused. With that awareness, there's, you know, there's no attraction, if you will. There's no incentive. There's no guidance even to following those same pained wounds. So accountability, yes, apologizing, but also promising, I think is do better is, for me, much more powerful. And of course, you know, sometimes the old patterns are so powerful that even someone saying, I promise to do better might fall victim to that. But ideally, we hold space for that, and especially as practitioners and friends and partners, we hold space for someone else's what might be perceived as a failure. But is it? I mean, it's just a step, you know, is it the step in the right direction that you want to go? Okay, no, but you're becoming closer to getting better and being more whole and being more loving. And being more loving also includes being loving to the self, to forgive the self for things that we've done and said in the past. And again, if they were enough blame sometimes, enough shame sometimes can trigger a big change in someone. But ideally, the changes happen from a place of love. Sometimes the blame, shame, change is a temporary fix. But again, it's very different for different people. So I'm just kind of talking in general terms right here.
Dave, you've been helping people for quite some time. And I'm wondering about these conversations about empath, narcissist, to me, and maybe this is just me, but it just seems like this topic has suddenly become so popular. Is that true? Or, I mean, I don't know. How has it changed over time? What have you seen?
I think as we do our work, we become more consciously aware of interpersonal dynamics. And, you know, when one person starts talking about it, it kind of gives permission for someone else to start talking about it. And it sort of creates a wave. You know, I first started working with empaths, as you may recall, my story that my unwilling welcome to the empath
yes.
world, getting drunk without having drank any alcohol, it really woke me up to a lot of things. Well, prior to that, I really wasn't conscious of the whole concept of being an empath. Even if I was one my entire life, right? So that awareness had to come. And then all of a sudden, as you may recall, all my clients changed. Like I just became the empath magnet, if you will.
Yeah.
The go-to guy for them, all things empathic. And meanwhile, I'm just really learning what that is myself. And that's fine because I was able to intuit what to do and what to say and how to be and what kind of exercises to do and like you mentioned, those are in my book, about doing our own personal healing around our empathic abilities and being able to stay present to what's true for ourselves, be the best versions of ourselves that we can be. So as time has gone on, the empath word is getting more and more play, if you will. It's trending, if you will.
Right.
to use a, you know, a social media term. I'm so tired of social media personally, but that's another story.
I know.
Me too.
Hashtag empath, right?
Yeah, basically. So that became more and more popular. And, you know, now a lot of people are teaching about it, just becoming aware of it. And that's a beautiful thing, right? That's, you know, as things become more conscious, we can work with them. And also narcissism in the same respect. I mean, sure, it was probably a very popular topic in college courses and in, you know, psychiatry, but a lot of narcissists don't go to psychiatrists or psychologists or social workers or whatever because they feel they know all the answers already, right? So it's just part of the dynamic. So it's not even like we can meet them and discuss with them, you know. There's the joke about the narcissist that finally went to the social worker or whatever it was, and they're, you know, the social worker or the psychologist has taken some notes, and the narcissist says, "Oh, you're writing a book about me?" So they're not really there to get help. They're there for more attention, right? And yes, sometimes they might go because that's a place where they can go get attention. A good psychologist might see that and try to, you know, determine how open they are to discussing what is. And sometimes not. Sometimes you just let them vent if they even show up to begin with. So yeah, it becomes part of the collective consciousness, becomes more well known, like a lot of things. And then we just ideally get good at it. Unfortunately, what I've seen a lot of times is phrases and concepts get watered down the more people are using it. But you know what? If some bit of good is happening from it, even if it's not great, so what? It's a step in the right direction. Everyone's going to have their part in that.
Yeah. Dave, we were talking about how sometimes you have to walk away. And so we're talking about from the empath's point of view here about making changes. And we've really focused on that. And I know we can't change the other person. I totally get that. But what is the future of a narcissist? I mean, do they ever really... do they get help? Do they just live their whole lives like this? And we're just kind of reacting and saving ourselves from them? How does this work out?
Yes to all of the above, right? Some will stay narcissistic for one or more lifetimes. And eventually, I think, just like a lot of us who may not even identify with that term, we wake up from pain and illness. Life happens and shakes us out of our stupor. And I believe something has to pierce the armor. So in other words, the empath has some armoring, and understandably, the narcissist has a lot more typically. Something along the route, somewhere in their soul's journey, something or someone is going to break that armor. And then they're going to actually have access to everything underneath it. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, you know, now or 10 years or 10 lifetimes from now, you know, it is what it is. And I think eventually, you know, in the big picture, enough will have woken up so that we all get really in touch with what's actually true for ourselves, that real oneness connection. We can start living from that place more so. And I mean, it's a great question. You know, I love it because I think it gives possibility. I can understand the frustration it can bring up also, because like, I want my narcissist partner, fatherhood, I want them to wake up. But anytime we want something for someone else, we're typically coming from our own wounds. Mm-hmm. What's really happening is I'm not getting what I need. So like you said earlier about accountability, look at that first, right? And recognize exactly what you said, Andrea. They're not going to change whether you ask them to. And even if you do, if you had the courage to ask, they may actually just say, oh yeah, I can do that. But then they don't.
Right, right.
Or they'll turn up their volume on the gaslighting, for example, or one of the many tricks they know. So I believe there's hope for everyone and everything. I truly do. I hope we get there sooner than later, but you know, that's just that. Maybe that's my own wounding speaking right there, because you know, it's impossible to put on the news and not be affected just to see the level of cruelty that it's being, and it always has been, right? At least in written history. Eventually, I think we have to wake up out of this. And narcissist waking up might be a big part of it. Imagine if one is like really popular and has an awakening and starts saying, oh, I used to be a narcissist. And
yeah.
Meanwhile, they're on stage talking about it. So it could still be some narcissism involved.
Yes.
How ironic.
Indeed.
I just have this feeling, I guess, it's coming to me now as we're listening, as I'm listening to you, Andrea and Dave, talk. I'm wondering if the narcissism trend, if you will, has a lot to do with the shift that we're experiencing, because becoming aware of those tendencies and those who strive to subjugate others because of those tendencies, a huge light is being shown on that. And I have this, that's what my guides are telling me right now. It's about the shift, you know? And yeah, what do you think about that? Either one of you, that just came to me in a flash.
Yeah. Well, I sort of asked that question with that in mind.
Oh, really?
Actually,
okay.
Because, yeah, because, you know, if I look back, you know, to when I was little or something like that, you know, nobody talked about these things. You know, I can't ever remember anything like that. And what we've said over and over in this episode so far, so many times, is awareness. Mm-hmm. And through awareness, so much is possible. And to me, that's what this shift is all about, is the waking up to this. Yeah.
And shining a light on everything that needs to change.
If we look at things on a much bigger perspective than we typically do, we can see this journey. The journey, I think, goes from oneness to an individuation back to a oneness. So we all hear things about duality and contrast, right? People say, I want to escape duality. Well, escaping is still escaping. It means escapism doesn't work. Embracing duality is what works, right? Embracing our duality within ourselves, our shadow selves, is part of how we heal a lot of the wounds that we've experienced. Now, let's take that to a bigger perspective. What if society and cultures and religions, et cetera, are also on a similar path? If we're born from a place of oneness, or oneness prior to conception, at least, and as a kid, we individuate, ego begins to form, love becomes conditional and transactional, as opposed to what's often experienced as a baby or in utero. And we really separate. And then this toxic individualism that this country in particular is really great at becomes the predominant MO, if you will, right? It's on the way back to oneness. So those of us that have known this, whether consciously or not, or we use different words, it doesn't matter. We do our work to get back to a place of oneness. And society also does this. So the individuation is really the egoic development. And sometimes that becomes so strong that someone coming from that place predominantly or even solely would be considered narcissistic or even technically a narcissist. So it's part of the plan, right? Just like pain and illness is part of the plan. Abandonment is part of the plan. It sucks. It hurts. And yet it's what is necessary to wake us up, right? Duality and contrast is a way to learn one thing about learning via learning through its opposite, right? So we all hear things like, you know, hot because you know cold, you know light because you know dark, etc. Same is true in our emotional body. Same is true in our physical realities. We learn not to touch fire, you know, because it hurts, right? So things that cause pain, we learn to avoid. Sometimes facing that pain is exactly what's needed. So facing the pain of incredible individualism is what's being brought up for us. And if we are in a judgment about that, then we're not really playing the game as well as we can be. So that's our own work showing up. And just imagine the whole world, right? They say even the Big Bang Theory is coming from a place of this oneness, that like this giant, right? It's not that different. Maybe all of that is happening within our own selves as well. So I think we all know, even though we don't always do it, going with the flow of life is going to be a lot easier. I mean, it's not easy, but still easier than fighting life. A lot of times pain and illness is from fighting life, and it's an invitation to go in and say, okay, where am I fighting? Where do I think I know better than God does, for example, right? Which is, you know, human arrogance at its finest, right? This shouldn't be this way. Really? Okay. You know, let's take a look at that statement a little more depth. So I think it's part of the plan. And as we, I don't know, turn the page, if you will, some of us are aware of this. And I think it's almost intoxicating to know about this possibility that we want it for everyone. I think that's part of our growth as well, is to accept others on their path where they are. Like we said earlier, the narc might not wake up for 10 lifetimes. Mm. Can we be in our heart even with that awareness, right? Or yeah. Even if it's not that extreme, right? Can we be in our heart with someone who's really angry and judgmental or whatever? We can be also, right? And it's not wrong. It's not bad. We learn about love by learning about the opposite of love, right? Anger, fear, sadness. And yet our intrinsic nature is love. That oneness is a part of us. It's underneath all the wounding. So the work is to sort of de-layer, right? So if I can put a little more tangible image on that, every wound that we have creates some kind of protection around the heart. And these protective layers layer upon each other, right? And even in the physical world, if something's really thin and really malleable, if you have a whole bunch of it, it's going to be a lot thicker, less malleable. So these woundings create almost a suit of armor around our tender hearts that just want to love and be loved and be happy and giddy and accepting of all, right? But it's hard to access that. So our work is to dismantle those layers. And sometimes those layers is judgments of others, anger at a parent who is narcissistic. I didn't get the love I wanted, damn it. Well, you and everyone else, and that's okay. It's part of the gig. It's part of the game. From what I can see anyway, I don't pretend to know everything, but this is what I hear through intuitive guidance, through meditations, when I work with people, and they really are willing to access those layers of pain. Incredible changes in their life. I mean, I can't even begin to list people who share, oh my God, this has happened, and all because of the work that we're doing. And it's not just me. They had a whole bunch of work to get to that point too. And there might be people after me they work with. Great. Let's all do the work, right? But let's also accept the path. And maybe the more narcissistic someone is, the more we get angry and judgmental about that, maybe that's saying something about ourselves, even more about that person, or even more than that other person. Again, the invitation to go in and really own it, accountability. And I would keep going back to that. So feel that all three of us know the conversations go where they need to go. I need to remind myself that it's okay to repeat, because some people are just going to fast forward.
You know, yeah, start that's okay.
45 minutes in, 55 minutes, and they may miss something earlier. So, and also, if you're hearing it for the third time or whatever, it's okay. But that personal accountability, to me, is everything.
It is.
Own who you are. We have anger. We have sadness. And it's normal. It's not wrong. We don't want to talk ourselves out of it because it doesn't work anyway. We end up just pushing the energy down, but it's festering inside, often creating blockages and pain. So I think keeping that big picture awareness in mind is super important for me, at least, and for a lot of people I work with. Recognize there's a place, there's a rhyme and reason, there's a why for everything that's happening, everyone that comes into our life and everything that's happening on the planet. It's not necessarily fun, but okay. I mean, it is what it is, right?
It is an adventure for sure. Not always fun, but my goodness.
Not at all.
Dave, this has been amazing. And I would love for you to tell our listeners how to contact you.
Sure. The easiest thing is my website, which is my name, Dave, D-A-V-E, Markowitz.com, M-A-R-K-O-W-I-T-Z. All the information is there. Our past interviews are on there. On the media page, there's a lot of other interviews and talks. There's a blog page, a lot of free information. There's a free download of the first chapter of my more recent book. A lot of people, you know, do that just to kind of see, oh, is this going to work or not? But even so, if you think about it, how much does a book cost these days? Even the biggest books don't cost a lot, right? And if you read, 500 pages, not that my books are that long at all, but if you read 500 pages and you get one morsel of goodness out of it, to me, that's a really big success. So whatever it costs, so what? Everyone can afford any book, right? It's less than $5 on my website. And you can learn a lot, right? And then bring that out into the world, right? It's not just about the learning. It's about modeling and exhibiting that higher vibration. So a lot of that is on the website and easily available. Of course, I do private sessions. I do a lot of group work. I work with the Shift Network. We had about 300 people in the last class, and it was pretty amazing. It's just a really beautiful experience. A lot of people had some pretty major shifts. And it was only 7 weeks.
Wow.
Really, 7 sessions over 7 weeks. Right? So, you know, a lot can happen. If we're truly ready to do the work, I really believe a lot can happen. And the other part, I'll just touch in real briefly. I'm just kind of getting a reminder. If things aren't happening as fast as you want them to, try to be okay with that. I know it can be frustrating. And a lot of times we might have mentioned earlier where the mind has this idea of what could be or what should be, but obviously the shoulds don't work, but what could be. And the body's not on board with it yet. Doing the work to get the body on board is part of the work, right? Set the table before you eat. Okay.
Oh, yes.
And it's okay, right? Wherever you are is okay. It's exactly where you need to be. I know sometimes that might sound trite or whatever, but I just have seen it to be true, certainly more times than not. And it's our own lack of acceptance of what is within our own selves that creates a lot of the blockages. So let's accept where we are. And strangely, like we said earlier, by saying, I don't know, allows information to come in. By accepting that we're not quite healed, allows other information that will let us get healed to come in. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a different book. Maybe it's, you know, a lot of people find me, they feel like these empathic transmissions that we spoke about in the earlier interview are why they've had, you know, pain and illness for so long. And a lot of times that is true. But without knowing that and knowing how to work with that, you're kind of stuck. So a lot of people find me like, oh my God, this is the X factor. This is what I've been looking for 30, 40, 50 years. What an honor to be a part of that. You know, so if you go to the website, you'll see a lot of things. If it resonates, great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. Maybe look at it again in 6 months or 6 years or never. And it's totally okay. So just from a place of acceptance, you open to all the beauty of the universe. That was the message I just got. So try that on. Okay.
That's beautiful.
Great message. Absolutely. Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show again. It's always a pleasure. And I know our listeners will agree.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great, Dave.
We're all in this together.
We thank you again for joining us. And of course, we invite you to join us next time as we journey beyond the Reiki Gateway with Kathleen Johnson and Andrea Kennedy.